Hello, everyone. Welcome into another episode of Kentucky Daily, a daily podcast covering your University of Kentucky Wildcats. I'm Sean Smith. He's Derek Terry. Derek, hope you had a good weekend.
Did, Sean. Took a trip down to Corbin and attended a wedding of someone I didn't know, but also went and watched Space Jam. Took my wife's 9-year-old brother. We all went and watched Space Jam. So some of that LeBron propaganda. No, I'm kidding. I'm not getting into this LeBron debate. I actually like LeBron James, but it was worth seeing. It was a cute kids movie, you know. But that was my weekend, Sean. How are you doing?
It was still drying out
from the Jacobson Park Lake.
Yeah. Spent Saturday and Sunday taking engagement session photos that required me to walk across rocks and shells in a creek on Sunday, which my feet are still killing me. Like, I remember being 3 years old, Derek, and taking off running across a gravel driveway and not missing a beat. And now I can't. I take one step and it's like I'm trying to float on it. And then, yeah, I had to sit down in Jacobson Park and the lake there and just mud. And it was fun, though. It was different. It was an experience. I'll give it that. But I enjoyed the weekend. And now it's another weekend closer to Kentucky football. And we're going to shift our attention a lot to football over the coming weeks, Derek, as we get into that opener that's just a few weeks away. I know media day, hopefully with everything normal, we're crossing our fingers. We still don't really know exactly what that's going to look like this week, and fan day as well. But we're getting into that point to where there's preseason rankings. And I know this is a big discussion every offseason, every preseason leading up to Kentucky football is, are they disrespected? Are they respected? Really can't say disrespected because the CBS released their top 130 today. Kentucky's at number 35. And it's interesting because we talked about ESPN FPI last week. And if you look at this, they like Kentucky to have a very good season if you go off of the way these polls and these rankings are laid out.
I just keep thinking about Mississippi State fans, Sean, when I read these. They're all over the board. I don't know if they know what they're going to get this season. Top 25 in FPI, picked to finish last in SEC Media Day rankings, 55th here. But yeah, we'll get to them a little bit more later. You're right. UK is actually one of these teams too, who, if you go to cbssports.com, it's actually their top page on the whole website right now, is their college preseason 130. And the way they vote on this, it's from the writers at CBS, of course, but also with 247sports.com. I don't know exactly who votes in it, but this is, it's a dynamic ranking, really. This is what they change it every week. They update it, but UK is one of those teams in the listed in the 26 to 130 range. I mean, they just go straight down on list, but UK is one of the teams with a blurb. And Chip Patterson wrote this story, and this is what he had to say about UK. With three new head coaches in the SEC East, it's Mark Stoops, now in his ninth year leading the Wildcats, who has become the most tenured coach at his current position in the division. Five straight bowl appearances and three straight bowl wins have created a fine reputation that can help keep a high floor on these rankings. And I think that's what we see here with the mid-30s starting point for UK. So I don't know year in and year out where Kentucky has been ranked here. But I got to say, Sean, there has been quite a bit of preseason love, I would say, relative to historical norms for UK this offseason, coming off a 5-6 year.
Yeah, you can't argue with where they are right now, honestly, if you're a Kentucky fan. And you mentioned 5-6. They could have easily been significantly lower. And if they wouldn't have had those years and that kind of reputation that they've built for the last 4 or 5, they would have been lower coming off a 5-6 year, especially when you don't really know what they have at quarterback.
Yeah. You set that quarterback battle going, you got a whole new offense. It's really interesting when you look at these rankings, you look at who else is listed below Kentucky. I mean, there are only three teams in this whole list who are ranked ahead of Kentucky. And that's kind of the teams you would expect: Georgia, Florida, and LSU. Yep. After that, Kentucky's ranked higher than every other team on its schedule. And of course, Chattanooga is not listed here because they're an FBS opponent, and this is all, or sorry, they're an FCS opponent, and these are just FBS rankings. But UK is somewhat pretty higher than a lot of these teams. Missouri's at 47th, and after that, there's no one listed below 55th.
No.
So if you go off these rankings and you're a Kentucky fan, I mean, I know this isn't how things work, but basically CBS projects Kentucky to be better than 9 of the teams they're going to play.
Yeah, which would be a 9-3 season if it holds up, which would be massive. But that's the eye-opener to me, too, is looking at this. You see Tennessee at 68. They're on the back half of Kentucky's schedule. Vandy, 105 on the back half of that schedule. And then Missouri at 47, South Carolina at 93, and they're on the front four of that schedule. So the schedule sets up with those four winnable games to begin the year, and Missouri's going to be tough. You don't want to ever assume a road game in the SEC is a gimme either at South Carolina, but we've talked about how this schedule sets up with that first four, that middle four, and then the end of the schedule, those final four. You could see this if this holds true, this could be a very good year for Mark Stoops in this program. If they get off, to me, the key is getting off to that really fast start. They need to go 4-0 in the first four.
They do. And again, I mean, these rankings, there will be others that come out. There's others that have already come out. You take them for what it's worth, but I do think you see a situation if you're UK, you really need to take advantage of this year. I mean, Tennessee's in a bad spot, obviously. 68th really isn't that bad, honestly, given everything that they've lost. I kind of thought you might see them even lower. Missouri at 47, they're interesting to me because it seemed like they were kind of the talk of the SEC East outside of Florida and Georgia. And now that it's getting closer to the season, I'm not saying people aren't as high on them, but it's kind of interesting to me that UK is kind of solidly – I mean, it's two straight things. You got the SEC preseason predicted order of finish. UK is picked above them. And then you've got this. They're 12 spots higher. So, you know, that's not a huge difference, 35 and 47. It's not a big difference by any means. But even the team composite things I was looking at with the star ratings, I mean, UK's at 22 four-stars versus just 9 for Missouri. I'm almost wondering if people are pumping the brakes a little bit on Missouri. I'm just not quite sure they're as talented as what people think, top to bottom. But they do have a pretty good quarterback. They've got a pretty good head coach, an innovative guy who has done very well in his career, especially coaching the offense. So, again, I'm not saying that this is going to be a no-doubt win for Kentucky, but I do think they're probably better than Missouri. But Louisville's pretty low. I mean, that's another team that you talk about media darlings. I mean, they were all over the preseason top 25 last year, and then they have a tough season last year and back down to the mid-60s this year. But how about this one, Sean? This is the one that, you know this program's kind of in bad shape, but then when you see it on this list, it's pretty crazy. South Carolina at 93.
Yeah. Yeah. That one really stood out to me. You mentioned Tennessee at 68, which given everything that they've gone through, isn't too bad. Yeah. But you look at South Carolina at 93. Yeah. That's a bad spot to be in when it comes to, which this is just preseason rankings. All it takes is a win early in the season or something to kind of shift that and you take a big jump. But yeah, that's a bad spot to be in. I mean, they're right there in the cellar kind of with Vandy at 105. Bottom in the SEC. Are there any other surprises? Ole Miss at 23, Auburn at 30. I had Auburn, I think I voted them, was it sixth? If I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to look back on my ballot.
I had them
sixth in the West because I had Arkansas.
No, I had them fifth. I had them fifth.
Yeah, that's right. I had Arkansas 5, Auburn 6, Mississippi State 7. So that's another one of those teams that, you know, fifth in the West. That is where they were, right? And then when the actual rankings came out, it was fifth, and they see them as a top 30 team. Texas A&M at 7, Georgia at 5, Alabama 1, just in case we've not mentioned those.
Yeah, I like Ole Miss. I do. I mean, I think when you got a quarterback as good as Corral, I think that can solve a lot of problems you have. But I'd be – can you finish top 25 with a 7-5 record, you think? Because I kind of think that's where they're going to end up, like a 7-5 range. So I think they might be slightly high in the SEC. It looked like LSU kind of got the benefit of the doubt in some way. Well, it's hard to judge LSU because they, more than anybody, they were really affected by opt-outs last year. And, of course, they lost so much from their national title team. I just think it's kind of hard to know much about them. So, talent-wise, I do agree. They're probably a top 15 team, no question. And they kind of get the benefit of the doubt, I think, at 14. I'll be curious to see where they are moving into that. But the one team that really made me open my eyes, and I would be stunned if they performed to this level, is Iowa State at number 6.
Yeah.
Matt Campbell's a great coach. He's done a tremendous job at Iowa State, but they're listed ahead of Texas A&M, North Carolina, Oregon, and Notre Dame. And then for that matter, Florida and LSU too. There's just no chance that they're more talented than those teams. I refuse to believe it. I know they got a lot of seniors, a lot of leadership. I bet they win a lot of games this year, but all those teams that they're ranked at, I would put Iowa State like in the 12 to 15 range. I think that would be fair. But number 6, I mean, to me, in college football, if you're ranked six, you're still among the elite of the elite. And I don't think that's Iowa State at all.
No. And when we're talking reputation and things and what Kentucky's kind of built, and you see where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like Kentucky, you're not going to see anybody put Kentucky in the top six or top 10 preseason polls. But just going off the SEC, let's do this here. Tell me a team in that top half that you think could underperform. And is there a team you have maybe in the middle to the bottom half you think could kind of outperform where their preseason ranking is? Do you see any one of those teams? I was looking at Florida or LSU. I'm thinking one of those teams are going to underperform significantly. I don't know which one it is.
I think Florida would be like an 8-4 team this year. So I doubt that's good enough to finish 12th. LSU is just tricking me because, like I said, I just don't know how much we know about them. They kind of shuffled quarterbacks last year, but they've recruited so well that it's hard for me to say. I feel like in my mind, and I might have been totally wrong, I feel like LSU is going to be better than Florida. I don't know why I feel that way. I just kind of do. I think Florida's just kind of poised for a little bit of a step back this year. I think they'll still be a good team, but I just don't think they're going to be – I mean, that offense is kind of changing its whole identity this season. They're going to be more of a run-first team this year. And I just think that's going to take some getting used to, but I don't know.
That's the way I was leaning too. Yeah. With it, by the way, was Florida just because their schedule? They play Alabama, Georgia, LSU, at Kentucky, at Missouri. Tough schedule.
It is. It is a tough schedule. I think Mississippi State. Just talking about some other teams, like I just don't know what to think about them. Like I said, they just fascinate me. I need to get on their message boards and see what their fans think about this season, because they're another one of those teams that is going into year two, but they were pretty bad last year. I mean, they went 3-7. They had the big win against LSU, but I mean, when they came up to Lexington, man, they looked awful. And I know it was still early in the year, but they were throwing the ball all around. UK picked them off, I think, five or six times. I can't remember what it was. One of those two. I mean, UK's offense was rather poor that night. And still never really felt threatened just because the defense played so well. But they do have their quarterback in place. Leach has proven over the course of his career that they can do pretty well when he's the head coach. But and again, I had them pick pretty low in the SEC, but I kind of wonder if – to me, if Mississippi State gets the 6 or 7 wins, you got to think they're better than the 55th ranked team in the country. So I think they got a pretty good chance to outperform that. Non-conference – What do you think about Louisville this year, Sean? I'm just kind of curious because I almost feel like people are being a little – I mean, I've pointed out numerous times on here and even on Twitter that, like, they're not a very talented team on paper based on the recruiting rankings. But they do have a pretty experienced defense. They do have a pretty deep offensive line, and their quarterback's been there a while. I'm wondering if they're being undersold just a little bit.
What does their schedule look like? I've not even looked at their schedule this year.
Well, I mean, they play in a bad division. I mean, they don't – outside of Clemson and, I mean, how bad Florida State's been. Like, I think NC State might have been picked to finish second. I know basically Louisville's picked to finish sixth in its division. And to me, that was just – I think they'll outperform that.
Yeah, and they but I don't think they're going to be very good. Early, right? They play Ole Miss first.
Yeah, and I would still take Ole Miss in that game. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Louisville's – they definitely have some question marks. I'm not trying to make a pledge for them to be ranked super high. I'm going to guess they end up performing a lot. I almost feel like it's like been a correction almost from people being too high on them last year. And now I'm almost leaning towards thinking they might be being undersold just a little bit. So I could see them. I think they're probably around a 6-6, 7-5 team this year.
Where does that land, in the 40s, 50s?
Yeah, I think definitely higher than 65th.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm going off on this. So.
Yeah. So, that covers everything with the preseason rankings with CBS. Another big story too, Derek, is Isaiah Cummings. Obviously, the tight end position. We knew that there was going to be some shuffling there when it comes to depth. They have depth at that position behind it with Rigg coming back for an extra year. You still got Brennan Bates. But then Nick Roush this morning reported that Isaiah Cummings will be making that shift and moving over to the tight end spot. What do you think about that? When you look at him, he's a physical specimen that has the body to play that spot in the SEC and the height and size.
Yeah, when we got down to Hoover and that news had come out that morning about Upshaw, I just did like an analysis piece, and I was like, I mean, you know you got Rigg and Bates there, and you got to expect those two to be the top two guys, but is UK going to be comfortable rolling with Jordan Dingle, a true freshman, as its number three? It kind of felt like UK needed to make a move to someone else. And whenever you went through the list, I think it was either going to be two guys, Trayvon Morgan, who transferred in here, who is listed quite a bit lighter. I think he's only listed at like 218. He is 6 foot six, but only listed about 218. Or Isaiah Cummings, who is like, I think, listed at 6'3", 228. And I think Cummings' rep as a pretty physical guy at a high school. I mean, he did a lot of that kind of H-back stuff, I believe. I never watched a Mel game, but I just remember watching the highlight tapes and things like that. And he's kind of a guy who it was always kind of a question, even when he was being recruited. Would he be a wide receiver or a tight end? You know, would he be fast enough to stay out there at wide receiver? He is going to be lighter than basically every other tight end on the roster, but I kind of like that. I like that he will give you a different look.
Yeah.
He's probably not the kind of guy down there on the goal line that you're going to put into and tell him, hey, go block this defensive end or linebacker. You know, you're going to want Bates and Rick to do that. But in certain packages, I think he definitely has a role on this team, no doubt about it. As a matter of fact, I think he might have a better chance playing this year at the tight end spot versus had he stayed at wide receiver.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Well, the athleticism, you know, Keaton Upshaw had the size and he had some athleticism too to make plays. And you got that in a guy like Cummings. You got that athleticism factor back.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it'll be curious to see. I'll be curious to see how much did Keaton Upshaw's injury affect what Liam Cohen wants to do. I think I'll probably ask him that at media day, or I'm sure somebody will. And I don't know how much he's going to share. Just, you know, you never tell in those kind of situations. But I do wonder, I mean, I think he was definitely a guy they were kind of banking on having a big year. And whenever you lose a player like that, you got to make some adjustments. So I'm wondering if Upshaw can do some of the things that they hoped for with Upshaw. Obviously, he's not as big as Upshaw. I mean, Upshaw is, what, 6'6", like 250?
Yeah.
Something listed close to that. I mean, he's a monster out there, one of the most physically impressive-looking players on Kentucky's team. So, you know, Cummings, he's shorter than that. He's not as heavy as that. But I do think you can pair him up with some linebackers. If you get him in the right situations, he can be a bit of a mismatch out there. So I like this move long-term, too, just because you know you're going to lose Rig after this year. But at this point, you got to expect Upshaw to be back, given that he's going to be rehabbing the whole year. Tight ends who leave early typically do not get picked very high. So there's, I would say, no chance he decides to go to the NFL now following his injury. So you could still have Upshaw, Bates. You know, you got to think Dingle in year two would have a better chance, and then Cummings as well. And then you're going to be adding Josh Caddis from the high school ranks. So this room's still going to have plenty of bodies, and I like that next year you could have potentially four experienced guys coming back.
And when you're talking about throwing a wide receiver into the mix and tight end, the one thing that you're getting is good hands, right? I mean, you're getting a guy at that position that can make plays in the passing game. And this happens every offseason too. Guys shuffle positions depending on depth, depending on injuries, preseason, things like that. So it's maybe this might – you think this is the last guy that shifts and moves, or do you think that we get some more stories out of camp where they move some guys around possibly when they look at things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that too much. It's always tricky. I don't think they really have any of those wide receiver DB combos this year. You know, like Zaire Hughes, it seemed like every year it was like you didn't know if he was playing DB or if he was playing wide receiver. I don't know if they really have anybody like that this year, just because that wide receiver class that they recruited, a lot of those guys were just pure wide receivers. I know Chauncey Magwood had to play quarterback last year, but I mean, before that, he was a wide receiver the whole way. I could definitely see some shuffling, like always, on the offensive line. Guys moving from tackle to guard or guard to tackle or, you know, to center. I mean, I know Wolford practiced five guys at center during spring ball. So, I mean, it could be movement like that, but I wouldn't think there'd be any real big changes. I mean, Torrence Davis already moved from linebacker to running back in spring, so he would have been one to watch otherwise.
And that's not the only story over the weekend. Obviously, I know you wanted to talk about this too on this episode. Kentucky football did have a decommitment, Derek, and I'll let you kind of take over and discuss your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Jeremiah Caldwell, who committed to Kentucky back on January the 23rd. He decommitted from Kentucky yesterday on August the 1st. I kind of wondered, I didn't follow him on Twitter, but I did read that he had posted a couple, because August 1st, for those who didn't know, it's the first day that seniors can get written offers. And where that's different is if you receive a written offer from a school, then like you're a serious priority. Because, you know, like you see Kentucky, they verbally offer a lot of guys. I mean, most schools offer hundreds of guys a year, and you're talking about a class that I think at max and have like 25 guys in it. So, you know, all those guys can't actually commit to Kentucky or whatever school if they wanted to. I'm not sure that Caldwell got a written offer from Kentucky yesterday. And I think he was one of those guys that I was a little bit surprised that hadn't happened already.
Yeah.
Just because he was recruited by Stephen Klingscale when Klink went to Michigan. I think they might have actually offered him verbally, like I'm talking about, but he's not been a priority at Michigan either. And you're talking about a Michigan guy. I just think he's part of that pipeline that Kentucky's really not going to focus on that much anymore. I mean, you lost your guy in Klingscale. Prior to Klingscale, it was not an area that Kentucky recruited very heavily. So I think part of that decision is I think Stoops might have wanted Chris Collins, the new DBs coach, to kind of have free reign, kind of recruit the guys that are more in his area. Obviously, a guy like Trevion Longmire, who some people think will play wide receiver, I really don't know. You know, Andre Stewart's a guy from Georgia. That's part of Collins' territory, but someone else was already recruiting him, not even Klingscale. So I don't think this is a big, I mean, he is a big loss in terms of the rankings. I think he's a 4-star at Rivals and he's a pretty high 3-star for us. And someone who I know whenever he committed to UK, there was an expectation from some of our regional reporters that he could get bumped up. But the bigger, well, I wouldn't say it's a huge story. It's just kind of a notable fact is, I mean, UK it, at this point, it's about a lock. Whoever commits first in Kentucky's class is not going to be around come signing day. You can go all the way back and correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, this is dating us pretty far, but I think I'm right on this. Didn't Denzel Ware, wasn't he the first commitment and then he decommitted before ultimately committing again?
I'm pretty positive.
I think yes. That's right. Of course. So Ware, I mean, obviously Ware ended up signing back. So you probably don't even count him in that, but you go to 2015, Montrell Custis, who ended up at Ole Miss. He was Kentucky's first commit in 2015. 2016, they did a good job. They got Landon Young wrapped up in like 2013. So, I mean, that kid was from Lexington. He wasn't going to go nowhere. So, they were good that year. But every year since Landon Young, Kentucky's lost their first commitment. You can go to 2017. It was Mac Jones. Obviously, that was turned out to be a pretty brutal loss. I mean, one of the best quarterbacks in college football last year led Alabama to a national championship. In 2018, you had the Jaren Williams saga. You did a pretty good argument to be made there that Jaren Williams' career likely would have been better off had he just stuck with UK compared to all the moving he's had to do since then. 2019, you had Keontre Smith, who ended up at Miami. He was one of those – he went to the same high school as Josh Ali and some of those other guys, so ultimately left Kentucky. Not a surprise there. He ended up at Miami as well, like Jaren Williams. 2020, you had Richie Leonard, an offensive lineman from Florida who ended up at Florida. And then 2021, you had Devin Williams from Ohio who ended up at Minnesota, and now this year you had Caldwell. So whoever's first – but there is some speculation, though, in 2023 you might get another local kid to commit first, though. Ty Bryant could be a guy. He was supposed to be in the 2022 class. He's taken that COVID year. He's a little bit young for his class. I think you would feel good about him if he's first to commit. But that's just kind of the note. I mean, at this point, there's a pattern. But you will notice, out of all those guys that I mentioned, look at the schools they ended up at. I mean, UK is identifying guys early who ended up at the Floridas, Miamis, and Alabamas of the world. I mean, those are good schools to be competing against. So if you're looking for a silver lining, that would be it. But Caldwell's instance, you know, a little bit different for him because his main recruiter was not at Kentucky anymore. Again, I would say I don't know that we even know for sure that Kentucky continued to pursue him after Klingscale left.
Yep. And going back and looking at Denzel Ware's timeline. So Denzel Ware did commit to Kentucky on February 12, 2013. And then he unofficially visited Florida in March and then followed it like a week later with a decommitment. So then there was rumors he was going to Florida. And then he ultimately recommitted that same summer, 2 months later in June. So I'd forgot how wild that actually was to have a player decommit, rumors of going to another school, and then recommit back.
Well, I almost happened with Williams as well. Jaren, of course, was a two-time UK commitment, and then that last one ended up at Miami. But, you know, he had some good moments at Miami, though. I mean, I can remember that game against Florida. He showed some natural talent. I think he's, what, at South Florida now, I want to say, but he's been to JUCO. He's been all around. I mean, I don't wish ill upon any kid. I hope he can figure it out. But I do think if you were to ask him even – given how Kentucky's quarterback situation played out, I think there's still a pretty good chance he would have started at UK from day one had he come here. And who knows, maybe it still would have been a disaster. But I got to think, given what UK had on the roster at the time, he would have been given a pretty long leash to figure things out.
And you mentioned all
these. I mean, he could be the quarterback going into this year, right? It could be a true senior going into this season had he stayed at UK.
You mentioned all these written offers and everything that you're seeing on. If you've been on Twitter the last 24 hours, you're seeing written offers by the Wade twins, you're seeing written offers by Mill Wagner. They're all over the place. So when that made me want to bring that up when you mentioned that. Have we missed anything else? I will say this. I've not even teased a mailbag episode, and I think today I've received 4 mailbag questions.
Okay.
Just in DM. So people are excited about a mailbag, Derek. And I don't know, do you want to do one earlier in the week this week and then maybe do one after fan day and everything too, and kind of just depending on how many questions we get over the next couple of days? You all give us some feedback on that as well, if you want one or not. And if you do, we'll put one together for you.
Yeah, in my mind, I was kind of thinking Wednesday and Thursday, split them up, unless there's some kind of news that comes out that day that dominates the news cycle. But I was thinking we could break those up, and that would lead us right into media day on Friday. And then we've not done too many Saturday episodes since the season's ended. But with fan day being Saturday, I'm sure a lot of you guys who listen to Kentucky Daily will probably make it up to Lexington to watch the scrimmage. But if you don't, Sean and I will have some feedback, what we saw, and we'll discuss that. So we would love to hear your thoughts on that as well for you guys who do make it up.
Yeah, and we do want to say thank you as well. July was a record-breaking month for this podcast. And Derek and I have talked about how things were going to slow down during the summer. And the opposite actually happened. Now, we don't know. Maybe in future years, Derek, when we built to a certain level, the lack of content during the summer may see those numbers drop, but they did not allow it this summer. Our listeners did not allow it to happen.
No, yeah, we appreciate you guys. I didn't think we would get there, honestly. We got a lot of downloads in the last few days to push us over the top, and I'm kind of hoping that, you know, here for a while, every single month, we'll end up recording more than what we just did. So it was a good month for us. Again, if you like this podcast, if you have friends who like UK, who like talking about UK sports, you know, tell them about us, leave our rating, all those good things that we always talk about, because I really do think it's helped us these last few months.
Yeah, it certainly has. Continue to leave the ratings on Apple Podcast, if that's the platform you listen on. I don't think Spotify and other listening platforms even have an option to leave a review. So even if you listen on those, we understand that there's not an option there. But if you do listen on Apple Podcast, leave us a review. You should be able to scroll down and see the stars there. You click one, you can leave a written review. You can submit one there. But as always, we really appreciate the support. He's Derek Terry. I'm Sean Smith. We'll catch you next time on Kentucky Daily.